Okay. Thank you for the invitation to come this morning. I'm pleasantly surprised. A couple of weeks ago, Jeannie asked us to talk about something that we started doing around the same time. We were trying to, and most of this was done mostly because we were trying to understand Jeannie's experiments and her experimental data. And I should introduce, the title of the talk is Ordered Loop Current States. It's more a statement about possible flux phases, ordering of flux phases in a translational invariant way in bilayer graph field, and then to some extent it's motivated all the way back to Holden's nice work on single layer graphene and trying to see what you can do in bilayers. And for some remarkable reason, I've been attributed to UC Berkeley. I'd be very happy to be at Berkeley too, but actually I'm at Riverside. your poster outside says I'm from Berkeley. I'm not. I was at Berkeley, but right now I'm at Riverside, and these are the cast of characters. Chandra needs no introduction. Lijun is a postdoc at Riverside, and of course, none of this would have happened had it not been for Jeannie's office two doors down. And then a couple of you, or maybe some of you, heard Jairo spoke a couple of weeks ago, last week, presumably, on all the data. And so I'm just going to go through that the way I look at it. And the reason we got into this was essentially trying to understand this particular remarkable set of experiments. So what's the observation and why did we get interested? Okay, so here's the basic observation from her data. And she had this nice bilayer system which is double gated. And what you find is if you sit at charge neutrality and you ask the question, what does the conductance look like as a function of applied source drain voltage, at zero perpendicular electric field, what you find is you essentially find an insulating state. You have a conductance minimum here, which is roughly less than 0.5 microsiemens. I'll come back to this. Minimum conductance is 40 microsiemens E squared over H. This is much below that. These two are at least a factor of 100 below that. And if you increase the electric field, you notice that it starts becoming conducting again. So it's very sensitive to where you are in the density. There's also a density plane, but at least it matters what electric field you apply. And this is the paper in Nature Nano. There are two interesting facts about this. The first one is, of course, the fact that it's actually completely insulating. The second fact that is kind of remarkable is if you look at what happens to this gap as a function of magnetic field, it actually monotonically grows. And in fact, you can see this is a plot where if I hope you can see it, it's what's plotted here, okay, the similar plots here, what you're plotting here is the source drain voltage, and here you're applying the magnetic field, and you notice that this region is a gapped region, and so this is the edge of the gap, and you can fit the progression of the gap as a function of magnetic field. Well, the one we fit it to in the paper is this one, and I'll tell you why we fit to that. It's delta naught, the square root of A squared B squared plus delta naught squared. But the essential features of this is at very low magnetic field, smaller than the gap, it's quadratic in B. And for very large value of the magnetic field, it's linear in B. And essentially the numbers that work out to fit the data, this delta naught turns out to be about 1 MeV, and this slope here is 5.5 A, not A squared, but A itself is 5.5 MeV per Tesla. Okay. So if you like, the nominal gap is about 2 MeVs, 2 to 3 MeVs at charge neutrality at zero magnetic field. So that's the observation. That's the net observation of this data. And this is what we first saw, and it was quite remarkable. We're trying to understand where this might come from, and she actually had been looking at, and in bilayer graphene has been actively studied, plenty of papers, and a lot of very interesting work has been done, even before we ever even got to look at it. So what has it done was to summarize what is known, and try to see, at least given these experimental facts, what works best. Okay. So these are all the phases that have been mentioned, and I'll come back to this later on. But the puzzle essentially comes down to, will any of these actually fit what you see? So the first observation is it's actually, at least this particular set of data, what it shows you is insulating. That is, and bear in mind, it's a two-terminal measurement. So it's a two-terminal measurement as a function of source drain voltage, and you find a zero conductivity, which essentially says that, well, for this particular data, you cannot explain it by using either these three. the quantum anomalous hall.
What's QVH?
Well, quantum valley hall is a layer polarized state. It's, you know, different layers have different charge, if you like. So this one is a nematic order, which has obviously a finite conductivity. Then there's the spin hall and the anomalous hall. Both of them have edge states, which give you finite conductivity, at least in two terminal measurements. So at least those three won't work. What could have worked in some, in principle, is the layer antiferromagnetic state, because at least it's insulating. But what, I'll put a question mark on it, it'll come back to this in the next slide. It really doesn't fit. It could, but it doesn't, and one has to, this is one of the things, there are two aspects to this. The first aspect is what got us interested, the second aspect came later, so I'll explain that in the next slide, and why this probably is not, it has a lot of right qualitative features, but quantitatively might not actually be the right state to look for. And the last one, of course, is breaks inversion. So if you apply, we know that the behavior is symmetric under the applied electric field perpendicular to the two planes. That at least tells me that you cannot break inversion symmetry across, at least not in the charge sector, and therefore it cannot be this state either. It's a quantum valley hall. It's a valley, the symmetry is broken, so the two states have different charge. Like layer polarized would be an example of that. So that's the puzzle. So what's going on? When we started looking at this, it's okay, if this doesn't work, what exactly is going on? That's the reason why we even started thinking about this in the first place. It got an amusing result at the end. That's why it's kind of neat to talk about it. Whether it works or not is still an open question. So I put a question mark on layer antiferromagnets. So let me try to mention why. In the paper, we started thinking.
What's the role of this order in the experiment?
Excuse me?
What's the role of this order in the experiment?
Is
it ballistic, small, big?
It's the I'll come back to the mobility. The mobility is very high in this case. So I would say it's ballistic. There's no, it's pretty high mobility samples. You can tell us better.
Yeah, this one particular sample is about 18,000 mobility.
I'll have mobility data later.
I think it's at least quasi ballistic. We estimate the mean free path is in the order of hundreds of nanometers.
What's the distance between
them?
It's about 1 micron.
Thanks. So the layer antiferromagnet state, if I now ask the question, what happens to the Landau level structure in the magnetic field? If I don't do anything else, just look at mean field and ask the question, what do the Landau levels look like? It turns out that the zero at Landau level, this is the K and K prime points. In the Bilouin zone, there were two nodes, and now you develop this Landau level structure, but this zero at Landau level and these two are actually stuck at the edges of the nodes, and at least in mean field, if you don't do anything else, do not move with magnetic field. The other Landau levels have obviously moved. They move with the cyclotron frequency, h bar omega c. And one can then say, well, if I say that my electrodes are only sensitive to one of the two layers, because you know each k point, at least each Landau level is populated by, at k is populated mostly by states of one layer and the other one by the other layer. So if we say that if we posit that our electrodes only couple to one, then it does fit, and that's why this form was used. This square root of a squared b squared plus delta naught squared is essentially the energy of this level moving up with magnetic field, and this delta naught is just stuck here, minus delta naught relative to a zero, and so you try to fit the data to an expression like that. So that's one way of trying to think maybe it works. The problem with that is, one, you have to make that statement that you only coupled a single layer, and the second statement you have to make is actually to compute numbers, you actually underestimate k. Not by much. Remember, it was 5.5 and you get about 3.
Sorry, I missed. You said some layers got stuck.
Not layer. If I look at the Landau level structure at k and k prime, n equal to 0 and n equal to 1, don't move with a magnetic field. So I can't see that. What talk can I use?
So if you take the top on the right, and the lower
one, what is left and right?
K and K prime, two different points in K and K prime. So here's the K, here's K prime. Let me look at the Landau level. So 0 is here, or minus 0, I guess. Here's my 0 of energy. So this is moving, so n equals to 2. That's going up with magnetic field, but n equals to 0 is not moving, it's stuck. And this value is minus delta naught. And this one is delta naught squared plus omega c squared, I think, factor of that.
For the other, it's just upside down.
And the other one is upside down. At k prime, this one is up here, stuck at plus delta naught. And these ones are moving. And that's why if I combine the two, there's one at delta naught, one at minus delta naught, and there's no gap. Gap is really not moving, right? It's stuck, at least in mean field. All you're going to get, if I combine these two and say, what's the overall energy spectrum? This is actually 2 delta naught independent of magnetic fields, in which case you cannot actually fit the B-dependent gap with an expression like that. If I make a statement that I'm only coupling to this, then yes. But yeah, that's the statement one has to make.
But wouldn't you expect delta naught to depend on
B? I'll come back to that. That's just a mean field, so you can go beyond mean field, obviously. This was done next. So this one we were aware of. And then there were two calculations I know of. There might be more. But this delta naught can itself evolve with magnetic field. We go beyond mean field fluctuations. So there are two papers I refer to. There might be more. I know of these two. There's one by Oscar and there's one by Maxim. What they find is if you actually include the effect of interactions beyond mean field, ask the question, what happens to delta naught as a function of magnetic field? You get some evolution. This I took from their paper, but Maxim's results are pretty similar to this. So what you find is you have some quadratic behavior here, some linear behavior. Once you remember, you're doing some mean field and trying to do some hopefully reasonable calculation of what's happening as a function of magnetic field, and you already also you have actually stuck yourself in the low energy theory, so you drop all the gap bands, so there's a limit on how far you can sum the Landau levels and so on. So given some criteria of how you're doing this, what you do find is you have some quadratic here and linear there. The problem with that is that if you try to fit the gap value here and try to see what the slope is, you're off by a factor of 4 at small magnetic fields. And in this theory, that's actually a maximum value the slope can actually take at very large magnetic field, and that's off by a factor of 2. So numerically, it's not fitting what you're observing in experiments. So I put a question mark. Qualitatively, it has all the right features. And one has to ask the question, if I improve, do a better job of this, maybe it fits. But even, I think, in Oscar's paper itself, he claims that this probably won't fit the data, at least at not a large magnetic fields. And at low magnetic fields, there's at least a factor of 4 off with the observed slope. So that's why I put a question mark. So it wasn't clear this works. So given this, let me go back. So that was my motivation. That's why we started looking at this in the first place. So what's going on? Why? What kind? So now I've told you all the states possible, and I'm telling you most of the states don't fit, and maybe LAF might fit, but one has to think harder. And so let me go back to ask the question, where did all of these ideas come from, right? Why are we thinking about these states in the first place? It goes back to the very peculiar state, you know, band structure of bilayer graphene, and I'm just going to go back to this because I'm sure he's not in this conference, won't be needed to explain too much. The fact that you have a quadratic degeneracy near the K and K prime points gives you a finite density of states, and given that you have a finite density of states, you expect it to be unstable to infinitesimal interactions and perturbations. And one could imagine that if you, and there's a reason I say the last statement, it's the fact that this thing is very sensitive to what's the environment, what kind of device you have, what kind of mobilities you have, so on, what's the range of interactions, and so on and so forth. All of that matters in establishing a given state. And the question is, none of those observations, all those states don't agree with the observation. One has to ask the question, what is the state that you're seeing? And just to give you an idea, this gap here is about 0.3. Gamma is so there are all the hopping parameters. Gamma naught is the in-plane nearest neighbor hopping. Gamma 1 is the interlayer hopping between stacked atoms. And for the moment, we ignore everything else. They're much smaller than this. There's a factor of 10 between gamma naught and gamma 1. So if we take this to be about 3 eV, that's about 0.4 eV. So this is a pretty big gap. This gap state are pretty large compared to the gap observed in experiments. That's the key. The gap large, but large in comparison to what? The observed gap is just CMEDs. So it seems reasonable not to worry about the gap states. So given that band structure, people went ahead and tried to compute either within mean field or through some sort of renormalization group techniques to answer the question, what are all the possible states? And these were the possible states that were listed. And so the pneumatic phases start and go. I probably won't do justice to everybody who's worked in this field. I apologize for that. But I know of the fact some of these states have been proposed as Oscar was talking about pneumatic states, and we can actually stabilize the anomalous Hall state by some fluctuation corrections and so on and so forth. So given that you're restricting yourself to that low energy theory, you can actually get these states within either mean field or some sort of renormalization group. And as I was trying to point out, none of these really work when you talk about this particular experiment. So that's not the only experiment in town, obviously. I mean, people have been looking at this for some time. And I think in 2009, there was this data, nice data, where you saw that the inductivity is actually going down at charge neutrality. And just to give you a number, E squared over H is about 40 microsiemens. If you invert that, it's 25 kilo ohms. So if you look at the number here, this is about 8 into 10 to the minus 4. This is roughly 1. That's very conducting. But at least the conductivity is going down at neutrality. So it's not clear it's a gap state, but there seems to be a tendency to a gap state. And the mobility is about 10 to the 5 in this sample. If I look at what happened, this was a single, by the way, this was a single gate sample. There was no top gate, so you couldn't really tell if you could distinguish between very well electric field and very well in charge density. In 2010, there was a dual gated sample, and this here is a gap, and it's getting closer to 1. This is about close to 20 kilo ohms, and again, the limit is 25, so you're getting there. Seems to be getting closer to a gap state. Of course, again, if you apply a magnetic field, it becomes quite conducting. Electric field becomes quite conducting. And if I go, and there's a reason why I put a question mark there, because there's actually this experiment too. This came out in Science last year. And this is a single-gated sample with a higher mobility, about 10 to the 6 a million. And in this case, you notice that it's conducting. It's nowhere close to 25 hertz. It's actually a conducting state. And it's not insulating. And in this paper, it was consistent with the pneumatic ideas that were put forth by Oscar. And the reason I say precedent with the question mark is because in this paper it was published by our paper, or actually Genie's paper, I shouldn't say ours. Genie's paper was under review, so it's kind of interesting that all of this was happening at the same time. And we had these two data sets, and we were studying a Genie's data set, and we were studying a different one, trying to figure out what the hell happened here. So it's interesting, at least, nevertheless, given the data set the Genie has, at least none of these states work, and that kind of was motivated a lot of our interest. In this. So again, I just want to point out the data. So that was the data that existed, and this is the data that we're trying to nail down. So what does this experimental data tell you? They'll do three things. One, you need a state that has a single particle gap. It's a gap state. Right? So we need something that does that at the very minimum. Second, it should not have edge boards. It should not be topological. If it is, then I'll pick it up in my two-probe experiment. So all the it should not have any character which leads me to believe you have edge boards in the state. And finally, it should evolve with magnetic field. Okay. And so what else is possible? That's the question. So to see what else is possible, one has to again go back and do it precisely how are these calculations done. What is normally done, and this is a bit poetic license here, it's not that you know if a stack atoms. What essentially you're doing is not including, you're effectively projecting out the effect of the gap states, which at k and k prime points have most of their weight on the unstacked atoms in bilayer graphene. Effectively, you're only looking at this physics and some effect, but you're essentially eliminating this from your theory completely. And then you're focusing in on the theory, which involves the following degrees of freedom. You have two valleys, you have two spins, you have two layers, and they're quadratically dispersing. That's your starting point. You eliminated everything else. And you look at what are the possible symmetry breakings of this particular effective low energy theory. Perfectly sensible thing to do, given that the observed gaps are much smaller than anything else. And so if you put long-range interactions in this and do RG, what you find is you can have a pneumatic instability. This was the work by Oscar and Kun Yang. And then I think Limonik also had similar results. And then if you try to go beyond that and you look at this.
By long-range, you mean Coulomb?
Coulomb, yeah.
No, Oscar didn't have Coulomb. Oscar replaced Coulomb with short-range interaction. Long-range with it.
Oh. I got it. Yeah, there are two papers. There's a short-range one that came later, and he says there's also a long-range one, so maybe I'm mistaken on that one. Apologize for that.
Oscar did the calculation where he replaced Coulomb interaction with short-range non-symmetry breaking. Mm-hmm. And we did it with the full Coulomb interaction, which we dynamically screened.
Okay. I apologize for that. I thought this was from... And so Then there were this other paper by Rahul, Nandakishore, and Levitar, we were trying to stabilize a quantum antiferromagnetic phase, quantum anomalous Hall state. And then, of course, we have very short range interactions. You have this instability to the layer antiferromagnetic state. So, if I want to go beyond this, what can I do? Well, I could think of doing one thing, go beyond the cup and try to include the bands. Crazy thing to do, but let's see where that leads us. Is that going to get me anywhere? Is it ever going to get me to a state where the gap has those three properties I mentioned before? I need a gap, I need something that evolves magnetic fields, I need something that's logical. And this was, in some sense, I guess, some fascination with Hall lens state in the beginning. It's topological, it doesn't work for bilayer, but let's go ahead and see what exactly did Hall lens do. Well, here's, and this is the way I draw these things, it's just that if I'm looking at the Hall lens phase in a single layer now, I'm just looking at a single layer graphene, it's essentially a state where you have next nearest neighbor interact, next nearest neighbor hopping, which becomes complex. And if the next layer is becoming complex, if I can order the phases in such a way that I have overall fluxes, and I order the fluxes uniformly in the crystal, this is what I see. So imagine I have a clockwise flux going through these blue triangles, and a clockwise flux going through the red triangles. And for this picture, I just assumed that the flux inside the triangle is uniform. Then you notice that the superposition of these two fluxes is a nice positive flux, anti-clockwise loop in the middle, and then surrounded by opposite flux. That's what it looks like. If I just look at the fluxes, and this is to be uniformly ordered, this is just the Hall lens idea. Now, it's possible to do one other thing. I mean, there's no reason why the two, in this particular phase, you're breaking time reversal, but you're not breaking inversion. Okay, that's crucial. You don't break inversion in this problem, and that's why you get the edge phase. You break T, but you do not break inversion, and the product is broken, and therefore you get the Hall lens phase. But you can also get something like the magnetoelectric phase. You could break both. You break time reversal, and you break inversion. What that means is the flux to the blue triangles is opposite to the flux to the red triangles. If I order that, this is what the flux pattern looks like. And this one breaks time reversal, it breaks inversion. And in single layer graphene, if you ask the question, given some hopping parameters, will this ever win with that? It never does. That is not in the field, this will never win that. Yeah. But it's possible.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. What do you mean the Hall lens phase doesn't break inversion? It certainly breaks the sublattice symmetry. What is it? Not the equivalent anymore.
No. They are in the sense that if I take this and just invert, if I take this to this, this to this, and this to that,
the pattern. Sign change.
The fluxes don't change actually. This remains the same.
But the mass that represents that in the Dirac Hamiltonian changes sign.
Time reversal is broken. Not inversion.
Is broken as well.
Not inversion.
But inversion also involves change of values. So
yes.
You change of lattices and values.
And values.
Uh-huh. Okay. In that case, yes.
Yeah. So imagine I try to. So going back to this, one can in either think of generate. Can I generate this with interactions? Obviously, I can. If I have repulsion between next nearest neighbors, and I can do mean field, I can always generate a phase that looks like this. So what I would need is an interaction that at least goes up to next nearest neighbor. That's what I need for this to ever work. So we'll start out with something like that. We'll start out with the standard Hamiltonian of hopping. This is the gap. Because of our old habit of writing hopping matrix elements as T's and gammas. In this slide, it's all T's, but this is gamma naught, this is gamma 1. We also included a next nearest neighbor hopping because we are interested in phases that develop because the next nearest neighbor hopping becomes complex. It turns out that this number really doesn't matter that much. But we put it in just as a parameter to start with. And then we have the nearest neighbor and the next nearest neighbor repulsions. We put them in. And there's a precedent to that. This is not just we were doing this. It turns out that traditionally you would think of all the phases coming from some spin orbit effect because as a charge moves along, it's actually changing its phase. But you can get it from interactions purely by a decoupling of the interaction. So imagine I write Ni and J density, I can always rewrite this as this. This is minus J over J squared, where J looks like a current operator. It has all the symmetry for the current operator. One has to be careful because this is not a very gauge invariant object. The only useful thing are fluxes. But I can at least in mean fielding, I can think of an operator that looks like that. And then construct the theory and ask the question, when does bonding has to acquire a finite expectation value, which is like making the transfer integrals complex. And then, if it ordered spatially, just as in Haldane's case, I'm going to get the flux phases that he was talking about, and there are two possibilities, the one which breaks time reversal and inversion, and the one which only breaks time reversal. And in the context of single layer graphing, this has actually been studied actually by Sridhar Gu, Carson, Honderkamp, and Zhao Liangqi, and actually Zhang in 2008. And they actually did look at this. And they say, oh, if you have sufficiently large interactions, next to the same interaction, you can actually stabilize the quantum anomalous Hall or the quantum spin Hall state, except that you need very large interactions because of the density of state physics there. But it's possible. At least you can do this mean field. It's not stabilized. I mean, it's not the low energy state. You need some large interaction for this to work.
So this is the current
yeah.
interactions.
Right? Yeah. No, this is density. This is density. I don't rotate as a current. This is an identity.
Right.
This is an identity. This is density. A dagger A, I just rewrote it like this.
Right. So you didn't add any current interaction?
No, this is rewritten like that.
With J squared, right?
This J squared. Oh, this 2 is up here, sorry.
It's not down.
It's like a Fokker decoupler.
Yeah. So the obvious question is, I said we can only stabilize this with next year's neighbor interaction. What about nearest neighbor interaction? They're obviously going to be bigger, right? So what happened there? And it turns out, it's very interesting. You can generate flux phases even with nearest neighbor interaction. There's no harm in doing that. The only problem is because of the frustration of a triangular lattice, dual lattice is triangular. So if you try to do fluxes, you cannot do it in a translation invariant way. The minimum you can do is a 3-unit cell pattern, so the KQ wave pattern, if you like. You cannot do it. If you have nearest neighbor, you make currents on nearest neighbor, the only pattern, the simplest pattern you can make is this one. You cannot make it translation invariant way. It's not possible. And therefore, you do not take advantage of all the nice density of state physics that you have, this finite density of state that k equal to zero, or q equal to zero. You don't take advantage of that, which means that the energy scale or the interaction, nearest neighbor interaction that you need to stabilize this is quite large. In terms of almost have a lot of bandwidth. And this happens even in the single layer case. That's why even those guys, when they did this calculation, they looked at the nearest neighbor and they realized that the nearest neighbor doesn't win against next nearest neighbor once you start talking about flux phases. So even if it's the next nearest neighbor is smaller, it still can stabilize the phase rather than the nearest neighbor case. It's kind of a neat, a curious observation, which is kind of useful. So now that I said, let's look at this set of states, what's possible? Well, I make Haldane or the other one in each layer and then try to put them together, right, and see what happens. What kind of states do I get? This is in each layer I do this or that, and then I have to combine the two and see what kind of flux phases I get, what patterns of flux is doing there. It turns out that B, for the same reason as in the single layer, this is always energetically disfavored compared to that. So we don't have to worry about this one. We only have to worry about this one and the combinations we can make between the two layers. Remember, they're also stacked, they're slightly shifted. So what one can do is think of either even parity combinations or odd parity combinations across the two layers. So we tried both. We know one of them, the even parity one, is nothing but the quantum anomalous Hall phase. It's precisely the same as you just take this one, the same phase here, and you put it together. This state breaks time reversal, but does not break inversion. So it has all the same physics as the quantum anomalous Hall state. And if you, again, put all the flux patterns together, it looks like this. And I can either do a turn number calculation of the band, so you explicitly compute the band structure, you find edge modes. If you did both ways, and I just show you here, this fact that they don't cross at the same point is a finite size effect. So just you have turn numbers 2, so there are 2 chiral edge modes in this case, and they cross, and this has a finite conductance. Now, what did we do in doing this calculation? We assumed that we have fluxes both in the stack and the unstack, right? Because we did not make a distinction. We just took this, which had equal fluxes in the 2 sublattices, put them together, which means I have same flux in both the stack and the unstack, which might be unrealistic in the sense that one might, because the fact that once you put them together, the 2 are not equivalent, depending upon the magnitude of the fluxes in the 2 might change, which is fine. It turns out that really doesn't affect this physics. The important point is the symmetry. As long as you break time reversal but not inversion, you're always going to get this state with edge modes. And obviously this is completely useless because look at this gap, it's huge. We want about 3 MeV, this is 0.2 MeVs. So obviously, this is a very high energy state. And we knew that. We knew that if you start messing around, going beyond this low energy sector and putting fluxes also on the next year's neighbor, you are not going to get states.
So is it still monolayer or is it?
Bilayer. This is bilayer. I took this and took an even parity combination between the two layers. So in the upper layer, I have this, in the bottom layer, I have that. And if I put these two together, this breaks time reversal, but not inversion.
And you don't worry about spinner for the moment?
No. Spin is not, it's not playing a role yet. It won't play any role, actually. What we are trying to really get to is there even a possibility of getting new phases with those features I started out with? Because what we really are, we have a set of states we looked at, it doesn't work. And all of them come from this nice low energy physics, and now we're trying to see what else can we do? Is there anything else we can do? Okay. So this obviously won't work. This is much too high energy. But what was surprising?
Can I ask a question?
Yes, right.
So when you say much too high energy, always compared to the experiment, right?
Yeah.
And I can be pain again with talking about disorder. I mean, you look at a transport experiment, yeah. Mm-hmm. So which where the mean free path is substantially shorter than the distance between the reservoirs, right? And why should this number be ever come out that is measured in the transport experiment ever come out of your calculation?
No, they have a different problem. There are numerous experiments showing the bent structure measures in bilayers, mm-hmm. like darkness. Mm-hmm. And it is a coincidence single particle using we're screening works very well and strong interrelated physics is expected.
These experiments don't zoom in on the low energy, low density, low.
Just sitting and telling you something.
Situation, which is what's. Mm-hmm. These ARPAS measurements look at large electric fields, not that, you know, near zero electric fields.
Well, they look at highly docked and not so highly docked.
Well, I mean, here you're looking
at. This energy scale is about the one at which they have doping in the lower doped structure. So if such phase transition would have happened, it would already have been. In structure where doping is up to from the energy of the same point to left and doping.
That's really my fault. So I basically have the same question as you. So 2 years ago there were various groups including ourselves measuring transports. The measures of electric fields and then insulating states and we see gap behavior due to the electric field in mm-hmm. this. And it was always much lower in energy than the spectroscopic gaps from ARPAS measurements. And yes.
No, in ARPAS gaps vary depending on the transverse electric field.
But so under the same transverse electric field, the gaps extracted from IVs in transports were much smaller than the gaps extracted from spectroscopy in ARPAS, and presumably because of disorder.
But at least, even if it's not the numbers, what I'm saying is this has edge modes, so it is gapless as far as transport is concerned. You'll always see square over edge or some multiple of
these. If you look at the energy scale here, there are
few. Yeah. That's because we're including all
this. This would have happened, it would have been seen in ARPAS directly from the spectrum. And it would be seen as absence of optical absorption in the range where optical absorption has been measured in Hundle system.
In both cases, this is not going to work. Whether it's because of the size of the gap or the fact that you have edge modes, it's going to give you conductivity anyway. So it's not going to work.
Which microscopic parameter does govern this?
Okay, so in this calculation, I'll tell you in the next slide. I'll come back to you, tell you. Because remember, I had my model had all of these parameters, only these things are fixed. These two, this, as I said, we don't care about this because, you know, nearest neighbor is not going to give me a, so it's all between, the, it's like all the competition in this, that we next nearest neighbor. And how big can that be given this one? This one is what's gapping out the bands, and so it's some, it's a competition between these two.
So the second one has to win deeper.
Doesn't necessarily have to be. We'll come back to this technique. I'll tell you the in this one we eliminate mostly because we know it's not going to fit the data anyway, so we're not worried about this. But the most curious one is the next one, which we call the magnetoelectric phase, because the reason for that is it turns out this state breaks time reversal and it breaks inversion, but it preserves the product of time reversal and inversion. So what you do is you take this and you take the odd combination of that. So you take this, you time reverse this and shift it. This is what the pattern looks like, and you combine the two, this is what the flux looks like. Okay. Now this particular state is kind of funny. It turns out that if I have very small order parameter, which is related to very small V next nearest neighbor compared to T perp, it actually is semi-metallic state. It's not even an insulator. But it turns out that as you increase the order parameter of V next nearest neighbor, which controls the thing, what opens up is an indirect gap, not a direct gap. This gap is still huge, but the indirect gap is actually tiny. And it is controlled by R. It could be as big as the experimental measure 3 MeV, or it could even be, it's tuned by the next nearest neighbor interaction relative to T perp. And this has no edge modes. It's not topological. It breaks time reversal inversion, doesn't break the product, and therefore it doesn't have edge
modes. This will not absorb at low energies. This will not absorb at low energies.
Absorb at low energies, yes.
It would not.
No. This has an indirect gap. This is K, this is K prime.
But optical experiments say that the absorption spectrum starts at almost zero.
But I mean, you not want to see this, definitely. But you can go from here to there. There's not going to be.
No, optical absorption, you know, the wave number transfer is zero.
It is in this, okay. In this case, it is a finite case. This way, whatever it is happening at finite. I mean, this is K and this is K.
Also, contradicts
Yeah, I would check. I didn't know about the optics measurements on this one. I have to check whether or not this would work or not. Right. But we were trying to get to the most parts, the optics, you have to go back and look at what this would be. This has no edge box, obviously. And again, this is actually stable. This as long as your next nearest neighbor fraction is about 0.05 t, which is about a factor of 2 smaller than your T perp. Actually, it can be even an order of magnitude smaller than the hopping between stack layers. This actually wins against the other phase, the anomalous Hall phase. So if you actually compute, given the parameter, the only parameter is V next nearest neighbor. So if you tune V next nearest neighbor, you end up with a phase. This particular state wins. And it wins as long as your next nearest neighbor is at least about half, about 0.05 t, which is about half the in the hopping matrix element between scattered.
Yes. What's R?
R is my order parameter, the flux. So R is the mean field mean value of the flux.
So then go back to the Hamiltonian and explain the limitations. I'm now confused. So where's the layer number here?
I, delta.
In the interaction part, where is the layer number?
These are all in a given layer. The interaction is always in a given layer.
So there is interaction in the top layer, and there is interaction in the bottom layer, and there is no interlayer interaction.
No. Because that'll be again nearest neighbor, right? The next nearest neighbor is the only thing we care about. That's further than the.
So there is no interaction between layers. There is only interaction within each layer.
And the mean fielding came from here. So when I mean for the JIJ, so I put that flux in there. That's my order parameter. So, let's see. Where was I? Yeah. So that's the only. So we ended up cooking up this state. It's kind of neat. It's a magnetoelectric state because it has a coupling. It's the symmetry of the order parameter is E times B. So I can have a coupling between the order parameter and E times B. It also couples electric field as E squared, so it's going to be even. It's going to close the gap evenly with respect to electric field, because the other parameter cannot couple linearly to the electric field because it breaks time reversal. So that's another fact, the fact we had to check. And modulo this objection about outburst, which I have to go back and check what happens in optical absorption. We try to do the magnetic field dependence of this gap. So again, we are not doing this analytically. So what we are doing is taking the same model, applying a magnetic field and computing. Yes?
So on the previous slide, you wrote 0.05?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So T. This is just for some example, or it's like universal number?
No. The reason this we came up with this is we take all the hopping parameters as T perp are all from what we already know, generally used. V nearest neighbor we assume is not important, so it's just a question of when is the V next nearest neighbor. And so we can ask the question, this T 0.05 is the statement that when does this phase beat the anomalous Hall phase given those parameters. We're doing a mean field of V next nearest neighbor interaction. We have hopping parameters, and the only question is when does this magnetoelectric phase win over the anomalous Hall phase? That's all.
Oh, I see. So as a function of, let's say, interaction, there are many competing states.
Yes, at least these two. We consider these two. The other pair of fluxes is much higher in energy. So that's out.
The Hall phase, it opens a direct path, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So what does it have a threshold? Because I thought that the parabolic...
No, it will always win. At the point being that for lower order, low VNN, it is the anomalous Hall phase. That's why you need at least some order parameter before this one can win.
But you still need a finite VNN.
Yeah. For
the whole phase.
Yeah.
But it will open a gap for arbitrary VNN.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying that this one is always going to win.
No, but my question is why it's not favorable right for any value VNNN.
Your statement is why do I need a minimum value of VNNN before I even see the anomalous Hall phase?
If you open a gap in a parabolic band, you can use the same argument people have used for all the other phases.
That's why I said this R I take it to be the same in both the stacked and the unstacked. It's not restricting myself to the lowest energy band structure. So if, as you said, if I have a situation where I'm purely dominated by the lowest energy parabolic bands, then this is not the right R to look at. I would make the R on the unstacked and the stacked ones different, and then I won't have any threshold for forming the anomalous Hall state. Well, here this is artificial in the sense that I've taken the same R for both, same flux for both the stacked and the unstacked layers. That's why this happens.
Can you explain why particular stacking of layers
help? It's a question of whether or not inversion versus, and is a symmetries of inversion and time reversal. You see, because if I stack it the way AB is stacked, then the inversion through the middle of the stack is preserved in the lattice. I can go through the inversion. That's an inversion point in the stacking. So if I now look at whether if I even and odd, the question is if I do an inversion, is the flux phase even or odd under that transformation? That's what matters, right? If you have something that breaks, so I have only the only symmetries I have are inversion and time reversal. That's what I'm. And now the only point of inversion in the bilayer is the point in between the two stacked atoms. So I'm asking the question, given that inversion center, what are the phases can I make? I can make phases that are even under both, even under one, odd under the other, or odd under both. And so that's the set of the states I'm looking at. If I took a different stacking, I'll have a different inversion symmetry in the problem, and then I have to construct appropriate states for that. So there's one other feature one has to worry about, that does this gap move with magnetic field? Now that's a slight problem here, because we are doing this on a lattice. We have nearest neighbor interactions, and we are trying to figure out what's happening to the gap. So we can apply a magnetic field and numerically compute what happens to the gap, but we are restricted to small magnetic fields, large magnetic fields, because you want to do a calculation on a system which is bigger than the magnetic unit itself. So you can only do it at very large unless you have much good, much better computing power than we have right now. So we hope to get to lower magnetic fields. So even though I brought it all the way here, the smallest magnetic field we could access was about 15 Tesla, which is much too big compared to all the experiments that were done. But the only thing this tells you is as a trend, if you apply a magnetic field, the gap does grow. If the magnetic field is very, very large, the gap does grow with magnetic field. It does have a monotonic dependence on magnetic field. The only problem is right now we don't know what happens at very low magnetic field. So it does have, and again, this magnetic field phi is flux per unit cell. So this is 15 Tesla. It's much too big to actually access. So what we would like to do is access the low magnetic field to see if numerically it works, if it is as good a candidate or not as compared to the layered antiferromagnetic state, where again, all these features fit except the fact that it was quantitatively off. And so we had to figure out whether this is quantitatively off too. And so let me just conclude.
So I think that the point about all the features that you do not agree with point one, which is just unprecise large area plane in which optics has been studied, and showing that there is no gap in the spectrum up to 7 billion. And optics studies need vertical transitions separately in each region corner. And you are speaking about large gaps in each of the pinpoints. So you disagree with from the 100 experiments in which the layers were studied in optics.
Are you sure that this optic experiment included the zero density, zero case?
Both the low density. Here the gap is for 200 milliwatt in each of the key points.
So if they were in the machine,
there would be no far infrared absorption whatsoever. But far infrared absorption has been seen in magnetic field, in low magnetic field, in no magnetic field. And covering the range from 10 to 1.
Okay, so I wasn't aware of that. I was only referring to, when I said I was looking at the gap state, I was talking about the transport gap, the gene is observing, which is about 3 milli electron volts. That's the only gap I'm talking about.
Well, honestly, I don't even see the gene measurements and things that you still have. If I layer that, we've been not sucking.
Well, I think really no one can prove transport
You don't have a demonstration there. In contrast to the measurements of Manchester, where there are demonstrations at higher temperatures and higher densities, the bilayer behavior is what
we
use.
We can see the from the corner hall effect. I mean, we have very nice corner hall effect in the same sequence as you would expect. So that's, I guess, the thing we do have the final behavior. Yes, actually, going back to optics measurement, I think I'm not sure. So
they should see even her 3 milli electron volt gap as well, right? They should see what she is seeing, the 3 milli electron volt gap that she sees.
No, but you have 200 milli electron volts for vertical transition.
No, I'm just saying that even if it was a direct gap, let's say it was a direct gap, then you should see that 3 milli electron volt even in optics.
The direct gap is seen in optics absorption. So if you would have a direct gap, it would be seen in the optics absorption. And there were cyclotron resonance measurements done in Colombia. Cyclotron resonance measurements in Grenoble. Passives as well.
I think now the sample those measurements have quite a high mobility as clean types.
But 200 milliliter walls is a huge.
It is a huge.
It's a huge gap.
I guess it depends. It's going to whether I don't know whether it's going to transition to another phase and
No, right?
Because it couldn't be obscured by disorder.
No, the point is that we still haven't...
And also in ARPAS, you would start seeing two shifted bands. And that's not what ARPAS is.
Well, this state is as genius. I mean, this state exists for very charge authority for finite values of density. That's about it. Right? So if you sit in that regime where we see hard gap, if it's in a precisely same regime we don't see it, then I agree. It's completely doesn't work.
Well, if you have some phase, there should be a phase transition between your phase and the normal state as a function of.
The problem is that this actually is unstable to the anomalous Hall phase. If you increase it,
let me ask a question. What would be your estimate for the critical density that will destroy your phase and make the system normal?
We haven't computed that yet. So we are just, at the moment, we haven't got the magnetic field dependence of this void yet, because we can't get to the low magnetic field. So this is very new. We're trying to figure out what are all the properties of this and whether it not works with her data in the first place. And then we'll try to see what are all the other predictions. For example, this also has a magnetoelectric effect. If you apply it to electric field, it has a magnetic response, which will also be measurable, because it's the order parameter couples to E times B. So if you apply an electric field, it produces a magnetic field. The question is, what is the nature of the magnetic field and how big is it? I mean, there are other signatures of this. That's just the gap. So one would like to see if we can do the magnetic field dependence and the response to external electric field. That would be useful. And then again, because all this is mean field right now. All these gaps are calculated in mean field. One has to, everything is overestimated in doing these calculations. One has to go beyond this simple mean field to figure out precisely what is the gap in the first place. But the only thing I would say is it has a lower gap, or at least the indirect gap exists. And the fact that the reason why there's an asymmetry is, again, because you're breaking time reversal and inversion. That's the reason why you end up with a gap and you're mixing in the other bands as well. Okay. So it's a new candidate. It was just curiosity for us that you can actually construct a state which has, even though I'm mixing up these high energy bands, it has something which has a low gap. And at least in transport, it seems to work with the transport measurements. Of course, there's a question of whether this is going to be completely ruled out by optics, which is true. It's definitely something to worry about. And at least for us, even before that, we need to know whether or not the magnetic field dependence works out numerically. At least qualitatively, quantitatively, it's not very clear right now whether it actually works. It does break time reversal inversion. There's a magnetoelectric state, so there has to be responses that one should be able to compute when one looks at the magnetic response in the presence of an electric field. And even beside everything else, what was kind of curious, and we kind of, even for bilayer graphene, this is true, at least for defining clusters, you don't need to have very strong nearest neighbor. Even if nearest neighbor is bigger than the next nearest neighbor in fraction, purely because of frustration, you can end up with states which are translationally driven by the next nearest neighbor in fraction. And even including the gap bands, which you normally don't consider in the low energy theory, you can end up with a state which has a much smaller gap, much smaller effective gap, which is an indirect gap, which I think these two are kind of more generally interesting statements. And whether or not this particular state will work, qualitatively seems to work for Gini's experiment, but there's more to be done to figure out what are the properties of this state. And with that, I will stop.
Suppose you have added a Hubbard to your calculation, what would have happened?
Okay, so I can only go back to what was done in the single layer. We didn't do the double layer. In the single layer, again, there's a regime of parameters that you have a nearest, next nearest neighbor, nearest neighbor, next nearest neighbor, and a U, and there's a regime of parameters. You don't need a very large next nearest neighbor to beat the U to get this phase. But of course, then you're competing with all the other states. And we can only do only mean field at this point to compare energies. But I think ultimately one always runs into this trouble that, whether my mean field calculations are better or not. But what was really motivating was whether or not we can even get to a state which has the features that are observed in transport. That was the entire motivation of this. So the conclusion was, if I have next year's neighbor, I can get here. Now, what are all the other competing interactions and what else can happen to this state is, you know, yet to be explored. But the reason we even got here was because the candidate of states that we had before were not working. You know, I wrote down every one of them that were considered. So we are trying to come up with a state which had a gap, which had magnetic field dependence, and then which had no edge modes.
A second question. Mm-hmm. If I understood you right, you have the same currents between sites which have no nearest neighbor below and between sites which...
Why
can't you relax that?
We can. We've tried that. It's a numerical, so there's a parameters to explore. I mean, you have to do mean field and you have to minimize. We have tried that, at least to the conclusion that you can actually get this state and you have an indirect gap survives that modification. But a lot more has to be done to explore the entire different fluxes, because at some point it has to go over to the traditional quantum anomalous Hall phase, at least when you combine two Haldane phases symmetrically. It should go into the one that we already consider in low energy. So there is at least we know that continues through, and how the gap evolves will also back, you know, it'll go through. So we haven't tried for the other one yet to find out what happens. Because we first would like to see if we can even get the magnetic field dependence, because that's ultimately that's what started this whole business of trying to understand her data. So once we have some, it's very new. I mean, we still have a list of things that we have to figure out about this particular site.
It's a very naive question. So if I calculate the conductivity as mm-hmm. a function of frequency and momentum mm-hmm. from your band ultimately that you get, then presumably I would have a small gap at momentum equal to 2k, mm-hmm. and a large gap at momentum equal to zero. Is that?
I would think so. Yes.
What you're saying. Mm-hmm. So, and you say that somehow agrees with the transport measurements. I would imagine the transport measure is small momentum behavior. If I push the current, let's say, just make the dullest possible experiment, try to push the current to this, that would be a q equal to zero measurement of conductivity. Mm-hmm. So then I should see a large gap. From your model, not a small gap. Or maybe I misunderstood something.
Yeah, that's what we discussed for 10 minutes.
No, but even in transport, in just a simple DC transport, you should see a large gap according to this.
Well, the question, I mean, you're doing a source drain spectroscopy, right? You're just looking at source drain. What you're essentially doing is not tunneling, right? I mean, maybe it's effectively tunneling. You're actually changing the source drain voltage. And you're just seeing where do you get density of states to go through. Not so much, I mean, so it's just a question of whether or not you can have density of states at low energy. That's what I'm trying to get at, but that's not what you mean, presumably. Because it's just source drain, and we're just looking at what happens to the conductivity of the sample. Not changing gate or anything.
So what you're saying is that the experiment is not actually measuring the conductivity at small momentum, but effectively at large momentum, which is roughly 2k.
And also things that you will inject electrons in whatever states are available.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Whatever states are available, that's what's going into, right? I mean, you just have two nodes. You're injecting at one end and coming out at the other end. You're applying the source drain bias. And it's going in where you can get states and coming out in that sense. And then you have some scattering in between. That's the sense in which this is being measured. That's the sense in which this transport experiment is being measured.
My understanding, to understand it correctly, within each
state,
you can holding a large
gap, you
can not get a small one.
No, not within this set of states, no. Not within this.
And the other question, if you start including next after the next interaction, which for Pullman interaction became only slow, mm-hmm. what will happen to your expectation?
We haven't studied what happens beyond, but the reason to stop at the next nearest neighbor was essentially because I can create the q equal to zero patterns, you know, translationally invariant flux patterns. Including more would not change that fact. I mean, I could make larger, you know, larger unit cell patterns, if you like, of this flux phases, but they won't take advantage of the fact that you have this density of states at q equal, I mean, at zero.
No, I'm asking about consistency of the theoretical procedure you employ. Mm-hmm. Instead of taking into account more than a home site coverage,
you have to explain why.
Yeah, I know, but actually why nearest neighbor doesn't work, because it breaks down. So you cannot have nearest, that was the whole point, right? Nearest neighbor will not work, at least for
my
practice.
My question is whether your construction will be stable against doing the same with cooling interaction with the case like 1/R, which would require an infinite number of neighbors.
You couldn't go beyond. I'm just saying that if I could keep more neighbors, but the only thing, if I'm looking at flux patterns, right, if I'm looking at this set of states, I mean, you have to ask the question about how does this compare to, let's say, the antiferromagnetic state, or compare to the, because the anomalous Hall state is precisely the same state that we have here, that we know already that if I include the infractions and some fluctuation connections, I can stabilize that, right? And that is one of these two flux states. That's the only one I compare against within this mean field, which is stable in some regime of even interactions being long range. But the question you're asking is, if I include more, like, if I compare with other states, for example, yeah, will
your
state
survive?
My state survive? I don't know the answer to that question. But the reason we are even talking about this state is because of the fact that it had at least these three features which were, you know, explaining Gini's data. That was the only reason why we got excited about this state. There's a lot more to be done to figure out if it's going to beat everything else. But again, then it's a question of what kind of mean field are you doing. And in most mean fields that I know, they're all stuck to the low energy structure anyway. You're only looking at very small. Okay, the other way of thinking about this is, I mean, this is strong coupling in some sense. My next nearest neighbor has to be pretty large. It has to be at least half my T per. So I'm looking not at weak coupling, but pretty reasonably strong coupling in this case. My next nearest neighbor has to be. So all those mean fields and RGs that were done in decoupling. So first I have to extend those calculations to this regime and then compare my calculations to that, right? So
I understand what you're doing. My point is that I don't understand what justifies taking into account next neighbor and not taking into account all the further neighbors in the interaction point. Because the decay of Coulomb interaction is very slow. You don't have any screening in your model. There is no reason why you should stop at the next neighbor.
No, we don't. I mean, we don't have to. You're right. We can check what happens to the next year beyond that. But the point is, to stabilize this all, then at least to get this flux phases in the first place, you need to start with the next nearest neighbor interaction. You can, next question is, okay, if I add more, make it Coulomb and do strong coupling, will I still see this? That we haven't done yet.
Sorry, just one more question. So the argument against the layered antiferromagnet was that that slope that we got in some sort of mean field calculation was
beyond
factor 4. So which slope did you get? I didn't get.
No, that's what I'm saying. We still haven't gotten that. That's why we said we are not there yet, right? Because the problem is we haven't even gotten to the magnetic field dependence at low magnetic field. Because we're doing numerical calculation here, where we need the unit. If I want to access about, let's say, 5 Tesla, I need my.
You have to do everything on the lattice.
Yeah, so that's why we are stuck. I mean, right now I'm stuck at 15 Tesla, but my gap is 3 millielectron volts. So I need to get, figure out either some better analytic way of at least calculating the leading behavior at low magnetic fields, or try to, push harder in this calculation to do.
Could you just remind me, the smallest field that you actually have, how small that is?
This is 15 Tesla.
15 Tesla.
15 Tesla. And the gap here is 3 millielectron volts. So this was done for assuming that my indirect guide is 3 millielectron volts.
So is that roughly the good slope that you want? Or?
No, but 15 Tesla is too big. I mean, their experimenter stops at about 8 Tesla. Yeah, I could do a slope here, but I mean, it's not very meaningful. My steps are also large. This is 15 Tesla, and this is, I don't know, next one is like 60 Tesla. Okay.
Is the rough slope that you would get even in the ballpark of the experiment?
Or we didn't try because we feel like we're so far away from, our...
15 Tesla is not such a large field.
That's one point. We could try. I mean,
you have zero as well, so that's another point.
Yeah?
You have a zero Tesla as well, so that's another point, so you can get some slope and just to see what
it is. Yeah, just this one. And we didn't try that. We figured we'll probably have to do a better calculation anywhere, so we could do this slope. But the only thing I say, that's why we said, I mean, I put a question mark on there, and if not because I'm thinking that's why, it's just that there's numerical issues there. This could very well have numerical issues too. Might not work.
Yeah.
which would be even more striking, because then we are in a soup. None of it works, right?
It would be that for layer antiferromagnetic, just has to do a better calculation.
It's possible, yes, yeah. Yeah, it's possible, yes.
Decoupling.
Yeah. That's possible, definitely. That's why I said. I mean, if you could improve on that, and I'm just saying what Oscar wrote, right? So I mean, in his paper itself, he himself says that it seems like probably something else intervenes, because he put an upper limit, so that is off by a factor of two, and that's his upper limit. So, but maybe that also should be taken within the realm of what calculation was actually done. I agree with that.
Just a comment. I have the impression that you can get rid of this large direct cap if you allow the current to be dependent on which side.
It does depend. This gap depends on what is the order parameter. You see, the direct gap, it turns out that the direct gap in this case is of the order of T per.
Okay. Because you're insisting on having current.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, we can drop that and then see where it gets stabilized. So this can be improved. I mean, let me go back. This gap here, this gap is from here to here is of the order of 2 T per. I mean, this is not 0.2 eV. It's about T per. That's what it is right now. And the question is, this gap depends on the fact that we put the same fluxes on both layers. You're right. We don't have to do that. So we have to see how this evolves as I change. And the question is, if that evolves, this will evolve too. So it's not like I'll get it for free. So be a bit more careful.
Thank you.